So today I wanted to talk about, and the sermon is titled, Blessed to be a Blessing. Blessed to be a Blessing. 2 Corinthians 8 verses 1 to 9. And what does that actually mean? What does it mean to be blessed to be a blessing? It just sounds like, it sounds like a tongue twister, like blessings and blessed and I'm blessed and I'm blessed. I don't even know what it means. And it just sounds like Christian jargon that people just say in order to say, oh, you should serve more or you should give more. I don't know if you've heard your life group leader say, oh, aren't you blessed to be a blessing? You're like, no, I'm not. You know, I'm not blessed at all. But if I had a nice car, or if I got, you know, if I won this free gift, or, you know, someone just like gave me a care package, and yeah, maybe I would be blessed. And then I would say, oh yeah, of course I'd love to do something. Or what if some of us, we won the lottery at some point? I think in Hong Kong, I just heard from some of my colleagues, they were talking about how the lottery in Hong Kong was about, I think, some 30-some million Hong Kong dollars at some point, and getting really excited, like, you know, let's pull together some money, and like, let's win this lottery ticket. And I was like, I don't know if we're gonna win. The chances are very, very slim, the probability. But I think that just got me thinking, what would it be like if I won the lottery? What would I do? How would I respond? Who would I share with? Probably no one. But what would happen? And if you told anyone, would you tell anyone? And how would you tell them? And what would you use the money on? Because that would be a huge blessing for us. And so I want to show us a video. It's not in English. I think it's Danish or somewhere in Europe. And they're not speaking English, so there's subtitles at the bottom, but the subtitles are a little bit harder to read, so I'll do some voiceover so that you can at least understand some of the language. But there's not that much talking, actually. There's mostly just, well, you'll see, and I'll just at least give you some of the information that's important. So we'll watch this. It's a father who's reporting and sharing about a lottery win to his sons. And I just want you to see the reaction of the family as they hear the news. So let's watch this video together. All right. That was their reaction to winning so much money. And I think, frankly, I would have had the same reaction and with all the expletives included, right? Like, oh my goodness. And like the whole video, there's not much talking. It's just the boy's like, oh my God, oh my God. And it's crazy. It's cool because they're speaking English when they say, oh my God, you know, oh my God, right? And all they can't get over the fact that somehow they're just seeing all this money. And the whole time the father's probably loving this, right? He's just trying to draw it out as long as possible. Here's 900, here's an iPad, you know, like, have everything you want, let's go shopping tomorrow. And there's so much joy in his mind and in his actions to be able to say, like, I've been blessed and I won something, and now here I wanna give it to you and share it. And I wanna enjoy it at the same time. So he draws it out, and I think the reaction of his sons is fairly interesting. And the question for us is, what would we do if we won the lottery? And what would we do with that money for ourselves or for other people? Just think about it for a moment. What would be the first things that you would buy? Some of us be like, I want a car in Hong Kong. You know, I want a Tesla or that new phone or that new bag or that nice restaurant that costs like 1,000 Hong Kong dollars per person. There are a lot of things that we instantly can think of like, that's what I would purchase. But it's interesting, if you go online and you do some research to what happens to lottery winners, not all, but it says 70, according to multiple studies, about 70% of all lottery winners end up going broke and filing for bankruptcy. 70% of all lottery winners end up going broke or filing for bankruptcy. And so this doesn't compute. You know, when we're talking about what does it mean to be blessed, to be a blessing, you know, the lottery is one of the biggest blessings that you can ever, clearly, you know, he's having a great time being able to bless his sons. But how does this blessing somehow then turn into something that becomes such a pain? And if you look into some of the stories of lottery winners, a lot of them get into drugs, they get into sexual immorality, They file for bankruptcy not just once, but multiple times. Their family relationships are ruined. Their friendships are ruined. So why is that? Either God, the Bible must not be true when it says we are more blessed to give than to receive, or there's something else at work in our lives. Or it's that this money or this lottery win isn't the blessing that God is talking about. It's not the material possessions that are our blessing that allows us to be a blessing to others. And that's what we want to talk about today. Maybe we haven't won the lottery. If you have, please talk to me. I would love to get to know you. But for many of us, we haven't won the lottery, and we're sitting there and we're like, God, I don't feel blessed. Or I don't feel like I have much. And so because I don't have much, I can't give much. And every single time we talk about giving and serving, it just feels like a chore. And I'm overwhelmed and I'm stretched already and I can't give anymore. And I feel like I'm being pulled in so many directions. And so God, today, during this message, I'm just going to tune out because it's not relevant to me. But I want to challenge us today by saying, no, it is. Because the blessing that you have isn't in the material possessions or the earthly or worldly things that we have, but it is in Christ Jesus alone. And that's why I want to give us the one thing. The one thing is that genuine generosity comes from knowing the generosity of God. Genuine generosity comes from knowing the generosity of God. And we understand the generosity of God. That's going to allow us to say, God, wow, I have so much that I can now give to other people. I'm going to talk about two main things as we talk about how this generosity comes when we know the generosity of God. The first thing that I want to talk about is how generosity is fueled by grace. Generosity is fueled by grace. So hopefully you've turned to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I'm going to start with verse 1, and we'll just read it here. So verse 1, it says, "We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia." The grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. And so right here, when we first read this verse, we recognize Paul is talking about something that happened. Somewhere, somehow, God has given grace to this church. There's a church called Macedonia and Macedonian churches, and he's writing to the Corinthian church about this other church. And so first question is, Paul, how is this have anything to do with how generosity is being fueled? Well, he's saying, you know, brothers, I want you to know. I want you to know. Paul is saying there's something that happened in the Macedonian church that reveals something about God's grace. There's something special that happened, and I don't want to tell you about it. And so let's look into what is it that Paul is wanting to tell the Corinthians about the grace that has been given to the Macedonians. So let's read verse 2. "For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity in their part." When I was reading this verse, I was like, oh, okay, so somehow grace given enables the Macedonians to be in a severe test of affliction where they have abundant joy and extreme poverty and wealth of generosity. And I was thinking there, I was like, okay, I don't understand this right now. How can I possibly understand this? I realized, okay, I'm a little bit of a nerd. So let me turn this into an algebra equation, okay? So here we go. I'm going to turn this into an algebra equation. So we have severe test of affliction plus abundance of joy and extreme poverty equals wealth of generosity. Okay, well, still, that's not simple enough for me. So let me boil it down to bad things and good things, right? So severe test of affliction is bad. Abundance of joy is good. Extreme poverty is bad. And wealth of generosity is good, right? We're all on the same page so far. So let me boil that down even more, and let's remove all the other information and just leave it to bad and good, okay? We're going to simplify this. So we have bad plus good plus bad is equal to good. Are we following here? We've done math and subtraction, right? And hopefully in elementary school. So we went from severe test of affliction, which is bad, plus good, which is abundance of joy, plus bad, which is extreme poverty, is equal to good. So with bad canceling out with good here, we realize the ultimate result is what? Bad is equal to good. How does that make any sense at all? Paul, I was looking at this, I was like, Paul, how does this compute? You have two bad things plus a good thing is equal to something good. It doesn't logically make sense. This formula doesn't equate, because bad doesn't equal good, at least in my mind. And I was thinking about it, I was like, okay, either there's only a couple options. Number one, either the abundance of joy was like so amazing that it outweighed all the bad that was out there, or there's something else hidden fueling this wealth of generosity on the part of the Macedonians. And what is that thing that's fueling the generosity? Paul mentions it in verse 1, right? It's the grace given to them. It's the grace that they didn't get anything, but that God gave them so much. And Paul doesn't specifically outline what that is here, but we know from other passages, God's grace is revealed in his son Jesus Christ, where he gave his son, he gave his life, so that people could have life. You know, I'm wondering how many of us, when we think about our situation and we think about all the bad things are happening, don't raise your hand. How many of us, like, when we're in a really, really bad situation, we're like, yes, God, I want to give more. No way, right? No way. Like, you just got sick. Oh, God, I can't wait. I'm so excited to go treat my friend out for that birthday meal because I'm feeling so horrible right now. You know, no one thinks that way. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. But when it is put in the view of there's some huge power, there's some amazing unknown factor that maybe we haven't considered before. Let's say you did win the lottery and you were a little bit sick for one day. What would you, I mean, if you really, you could bless them. You could just say, hey, here's some money. Go bless yourself. And go send them to the restaurant on their own. But just when there's this other factor, we're realizing, wow, there's something bigger than ourselves, than our circumstances, than what we see right in front of us that's allowing this church, the Macedonian church, to give. And it's such a powerful fuel that it goes beyond any of our understandings. It defies logic. What does that grace really give? Or what is that grace that he's talking about? It's unmerited favor. When we talk about grace, we usually describe it as unmerited favor. It's not anything that you did. It's not anything that you earned. It wasn't anything that somehow you worked hard enough to get or to accomplish. It was something that was just given to you. Something that you just received. Something that you're just blessed by. I don't know how many of us, like, we weren't looking for this church. But somehow God brought this church to us. We were walking on the street and someone in this bright yellow shirt said, hi, I want to get to know you. We're like, awkward, I don't want to get to know you. We're like, I want to meet you and I want to invite you and come join our community. And at first you're like, okay, this person's a little creepy. I don't know if I can trust them. You're like, okay, but what the heck, let me try. The fact that you're open to trying, that's the grace of God, amen, right? But then you come and you join Life Group community and you realize, wow, there's something so different. I mean, yeah, the people are a little bit nicer. You know, they try to like have refreshments at the end every single time, so there's some free food. That's great. But there's that X factor that you just can't put your finger on. You're like, there's something different that I just feel so filled, so loved, so satisfied in this place that I haven't felt anywhere else. That's not anything that you deserve. It's not like, you know, you work so hard and then, you know, because you work so hard, God created this community and brought people here to love you and to do refreshments. No, you can't take any credit from that. But it was God's grace that allowed you to experience it. It was his unmerited favor, his love
for you that allowed you to experience these things. So that unmerited favor, what did it exhibit? What did it fuel for the Macedonians? There are three types of generosity that grace fuels. And we see this as he continues to talk about the Macedonian church. Let's continue on and read verses 3 through 5. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. So there are three types of generosity that grace fuels in this passage. And the first type is monetary generosity. Monetary generosity. In verse 3, it talks about how they gave according to their means and beyond. And the reason why we know it's monetary is because in the previous passages, Paul talks about how the churches, they were taking a monetary offering for the church in Jerusalem because the church in Jerusalem was going through some really terrible or difficult situations. And we also see this in verse 4 where it says, you know, they were begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And so he's saying that the Macedonian church was aware of some difficult trial that the church in Jerusalem was going through, the saints in Jerusalem they were going through. And so they were begging for some opportunity to give monetarily to that need. And so clearly it highlights the fact that, you know, money is involved in some way, shape, or form. And many of us, as we think about generosity, you know, typically when we talk about giving, we talk about three things: time, talent, and treasure. And, you know, usually when we hear about messages on giving, we expect a healthy balance. Okay, time, talent, and treasure, you know, we want to talk about them all equally. But for whatever reason, the Macedonians, they felt it's important to give their treasure, which is their money, their finances. But why is that? Why is money and monetary generosity so important to Christ, to the Bible? Many of you have heard, money is one of the things that Jesus talks about most in the Bible. It's actually something that's talked about more than almost any other topic. And sometimes that should surprise us because I thought Jesus valued love. I thought he cared about, you know, salvation or faith or some of these bigger theological topics that are so important. But for whatever reason, Jesus talks about money so much. And there's a clear reason why. I want to share what that is. In Matthew 6, verse 19 to 21, in the ESV it says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." This is just one of the verses that Jesus talks about money or treasure. And he makes a very profound observation. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What is he saying? He's saying money is a heart issue. Where you put your finances is a heart issue. Where your treasure is, it shows where your heart is, what your heart is attached to, what you care about, what you desire, what you put your security in. I know this personally. I have an honest confession about the lottery. I think I shared earlier, my colleagues were talking about the lottery, I think a month or two back. And in Hong Kong, the lottery is like 30 million Hong Kong dollars, which is, you know, it's a lot of money. You could buy one or two, maybe just one flat in Hong Kong with that kind of money. Prices are going down a little bit, so you maybe just one, maybe one and a half, right? 30 million, it's just like, wow, that's a lot of money. But Hong Kong, it's a city of 7 million people, so, the lottery typically is driven by how many people participate. So with 7 to 8 million people, the lottery is only going to go up to so much. In the U.S., there's 300 million people, so the potential for the lottery is much, much greater, the amount. And so I don't know if some of you who are just news fanatics, even if you're not interested in U.S. news, even global news, this thing started popping up, and this is why it caught my attention. I was reading the news, and I saw there's this thing called Mega Millions in the U.S. It's a lottery system that goes all across the U.S. And the news was like, Mega Millions, it's now like $700 million. I was like, wow, $700 million. That's like more than 10 times of what the Hong Kong amount, plus it's a U.S. dollar amount. So it's even more than that. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. So immediately I was like so tempted. I was like, oh man, like what could I do with $700 million? I was like, don't be tempted. Don't be tempted. You know, I was like praying. I was like, okay, it's just, you're not going to win, right? And the probability of you winning the lottery is like 1 in 300 million. Like you have 100 times more opportunity to be bitten by a shark than you have to win the lottery. And that's even if you never go into the ocean, right? So it's like, wow. There's almost no probability that you're going to win the lottery at all. And so I was like, okay, fighting, you know, like in my mind, I'm like, okay, there's no probability, but I want this one. And no probability, I was like, going back and forth. I was like, okay, 700, okay, it's not possible. And then, okay, forget it. And then later, I think the next night, I guess the drawing happened and no one won the lottery. So when no one wins the lottery, what happens? The lottery amount goes up. And so I saw the news and this is what happened. I think there's a photo here. The lottery amount went to 1.6 billion. U.S. dollars. I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, I was sitting on my bed at home and I was like, I should really go to sleep right now, but it's $1.6 billion. And so honest confession, I bought lottery tickets. And I was like, you know, what could I do? And I was thinking, and I realistically, I started thinking a lot like, oh, like I could like buy a flat. I could be totally set. I could quit my job. Like, you know, our budget could be totally solved, like, in one swipe. We would not have to do anything. No more updates. Who cares, you know? Like, we'll buy our own building. We'll buy, like, a whole section of Central with that kind of money, you know? I heard the Excelsior Hotel is being sold for some amount of money. I could buy that, too, you know? Like, who cares? You know, there's so much we could do with that amount of money. And then, so I was like, you know, God, like, I just bought it, and I stayed up for, like, another hour because my phone wasn't working, and I was like, this is not going through right. And then the next day the drawing happened, and guess what happened? I did not win the lottery. Of course, you know, I didn't get bitten by a shark, so clearly I didn't win the lottery. And so I think as I was sharing this, I was like honestly confessing to my accountability partner, my life group, every single person. I was like, oh, I bought lottery tickets. And I was reflecting back, and they're asking me questions like, why did you buy the lottery ticket? And the conclusion I came to was like, oh, it's a condition of my heart. It's what my heart yearns for. And I realized being in Hong Kong, I realized financial security is something that I've never had to struggle with, but it's something that I'm thinking about more and more now as, you know, I look forward to getting married, as I think about starting a family, as I think about rent prices and things in Hong Kong, and I'm just like, wow, there's so much that I have to think about that finances are so essential to. I realized, like, I'm just looking for an easy way to somehow solve my heart problem by this ridiculous probability that I'm never going to get, but somehow my heart is so attached to it that I can't let go of the thought of, like, what if? What if? And I'm not wondering how many of you have purchased lottery before, but how many of us, that's something that we can identify with. We realize that there are things that we do, decisions that we make, that show and reveal that our hearts are still so bound by financial security or success, or what it means to be stable in our lives by having enough. Even if it means, even if all that we're thinking about is like, God, I just want to survive, you know? I just want to survive in this place. But somehow in that wanting to survive, our hearts are still tied to that hope of, I'm going to have this much. And that's going to help me and allow me to live there's a happy life or a joyful experience, or allow me to provide for my kids or give them the education that I want them to give them. And that's not even, Paul doesn't stop there. He doesn't say just, okay, monetary contribution is just this heart issue. And that's what Jesus is saying. But he's saying the Macedonians, he one-ups that challenge. He says they gave according to their means, but not only according to their means, he says what? They gave beyond their means. So some of us were struggling with this heart issue where we can just barely get by just with what we have right now, and we're so consumed with somehow maintaining and managing all that we have. But he's saying there's something more than that. I'm challenging you to give above and beyond that, what you've given. Many of us, we've grown up in church, and we have this concept of the tithe. 10% of your gross income you ought to give to the church. And you're like, God, I can't even meet that, right? You're like, that's crazy. He's saying, give beyond that. What does that tithe even mean? Tithe, it means tenth. It's primarily an Old Testament concept. But the example of giving in the New Testament goes far beyond 10%. So some of us were like, I'm not bound by the Old Testament, so why should I give? Why should I give 10%? It doesn't make any sense, and there's so many things I have to worry about, so you know, I'm not really good, you know, it doesn't make sense, and you know, I'm going to give this excuse of like, oh, that's Old Testament stuff, so I don't have to think about it. I'm not bound by Old Testament law, so yeah, I don't think I'm going to give. But if you look in the Old Testament, it's even crazier what the examples of giving are. We're not going to look into these passages in depth, but there's the example of where Jesus talks about the woman who gives 2 copper coins. And he commends her. He says, this woman gave everything she had to live on. And he says, this woman gave far more than all those Pharisees or teachers of the law who have so much money, and they gave so much. Why? Because he was what? He was looking at her heart. He was saying she gave beyond what she was able to give. She gave 100% or more of what she had. How many of us were willing to give 100% of what we have? That's just one example. The other example, don't raise your hand again. How many of us, we were in the first life group where we studied Acts 2, 42 to 47. That's the passage that we always talk about when we refer to our life groups. You know, we want to experience love and investment, faith and enjoyment. Right? And your life leader does this little dance, you know, every time we talk about that. You're like, that's the Acts 2 church. We want to see our community be like that. Until you get to that part where it says they were selling their possessions and giving to any as who had need. And you're like, oh, what does that mean? We're not communists, right? I'm not trying to be political here, but some of us, we're like, what does that really mean? I don't want to, I'm not actually going to give my possessions to anyone who has need, does it? Well, I don't know how else you interpret that in the Acts 2 church. They gave to as anyone had need. They sold possessions. They brought the money to the apostles' feet, and they distributed it to those who were poor. They gave way more than the 10% that was expected in the Old Testament. And some of us are saying, you know, I don't want to be bound by these Old Testament laws. But Paul's example here is he's saying, don't just give within your means. Give beyond your means. And the only way that you're going to be able to give beyond your means is if you experience the grace of God. If there's some deeper power, if there's some unexplainable resource, reservoir, of strength, power, energy, faith, and trust that doesn't come from you. Because you look at your bank account and you're like, I don't have much. You look at your financial situation and you're like, it doesn't look good. But it's only that grace, that unexplainable just love of God that can compel us to give anything beyond what we're able to give on our own. And that's why monetary generosity is so important to God. Because it's not just an issue of how much. It's not just an issue of tithing 10%. That's just the base. But he's saying it's your heart that I care about. It's what's inside. What you're willing to sacrifice, what you're willing to give, not because you have to meet a certain expectation or what people are saying, but because you've received something, a power that is undeniable, that fuels you beyond your own abilities. That's what God cares about. So that's the first thing, monetary generosity. The second thing is proactive generosity. We notice in the verses, Paul talks about how the Macedonian church, they gave of their own accord, means on their own initiative. And then it says they were begging for the favor, the opportunity, or the privilege of participating in this work of giving. How many of us, we've begged, saying, please let me give to you. And I'm not talking about, you know, when you're at the Chinese restaurant with your parents, they're like, you know, you're fighting over the bill, please, you know, let me pay. No, it's not like that. Right? Because who's that really for? It's more for the image and not looking bad, right? That's not what he's talking about. But when's the last time you're like, please, you know, I see this need and, you know, God has just welled up this generosity and this grace in my heart so much that I can't do anything but to give. And I want to help out because I've been so blessed. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, in the ESV, it says, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. A cheerful giver. How many of us, we've thought of giving as something so cheerful and so joyful? The only way that giving can be joyful, the only way that you can be like, I'm so happy to give away something that I have, is if there's some infinite resource that you have. It doesn't matter how much you give because you're so glad to be able to give it to someone else. And I think one thing I'm really thankful for is we have people like that in our church. We have people in our church that you've received the grace of God and you're so thankful and you've experienced so much. Maybe you've experienced what I described earlier, that you found, you know, community that you found support in that you never found before, or love that you never experienced before, or intimacy. Maybe during the worship times, God just met you so powerfully at a retreat and God just like totally changed your life and helped you break free from so much just darkness and stress that you're just like, wow, God, you know, you're so good and I want to give. And, you know, I just want to thank all of you who you've received that and that just led you to give. And you've been so proactive and you've taken so much initiative. And as we've been sharing the budget, you just said, you know, God, I know this is what I feel convicted to give, but because I've been so blessed, I want to give more. And so I just want to thank, can we praise God for everyone who's been that way? Praise God. And we're not praising those people for their work, right? But we're praising the God who has given the grace that allows them to respond in that way. And that's what we want to see with this proactive generosity. And on the flip side, I want to challenge many of us that we come week after week and we just sit there. And we're just consumers. That we take God's grace for granted. And we receive, we sit in life group, and someone else does everything. That refreshment sign-up list, you're like, no, I don't see it. We hear someone calling out for, hey, does anyone help out with blue ticks? Oh, I was on vacation. Oh, I don't. You know, you don't open the message so that you don't get blue ticks. You know, oh, I didn't see it. My question for you is: have you really experienced God's grace? And are you taking God's grace for granted? And what does that show about where your faith genuinely is at? Don't be a consumer. Respond to God's unmerited favor, His grace. The last one is whole life generosity. This is the third way that generosity is expressed. I'm going to read that verse 5 again. It says, and this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us. They gave themselves first to the Lord. So it's no longer just money. It's no longer just this proactive initiative. The Macedonians, they gave their whole lives. They gave themselves. In Matthew 10, verse 39 in the New Living Translation, it says, if you cling to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find it.
How many of us, we realize that when we actually give up our lives, our whole lives, all of our decisions, our wants, our needs, our desires, our hopes, our dreams, that is what helps us to see how grace is the fuel for our generosity. This is the ultimate challenge for us. Are we willing to give up our whole lives for Jesus Christ? That includes our finances, that includes our time, that includes our treasure. Because we realize when we cling on to things of our own, that in reality we're going to lose everything. Because that means we're going to lose, we never experienced that grace to begin with. And so this is the challenge, is have we experienced that? Are we trying to cling on to our lives? Whether it's for students, it's your GPA. You know, you think, okay, if I get this good GPA, then I'm going to be able to get this good internship. This good internship means this good job, and then this good job means stable financial career. And how many of you single adults and married couples, you're like, nope, that doesn't guarantee that. My job sucks right now. I don't feel financially secure at all. You're buying into a lie. You're clinging on to something that you'll lose your life. And those of us who are single adults, American, we're thinking, oh, we know now, but we don't. We're clinging on to that job, somehow thinking that, oh, the more overtime I work, somehow the more money I'm going to get, the more stable my job is, and I'm going to get that promotion. So when I get that promotion, then I can get married, I can have this house, and I can have a stable family. We realize it doesn't pan out that way. It never works linear. And even if we're married and we have family and we have kids, we try to control everything. And married couples, you probably know that you can't control everything, especially with your kids. So that's the challenge. Macedonians, they exemplified this whole life generosity. And are we going to cling on to our own lives? Or are we going to say, God, so when I give up my life to you, I give it to you because you've been so good, that grace is so good that allows me to experience real life that you wanted me to experience. That's why that generosity has to be fueled by experience of grace. It has to be fueled by grace. So that's the first point. And I want to move on with the second point. And that not only is generosity fueled by grace, but generosity reveals grace. So on one side, generosity is fueled. So there's this grace, there's this overwhelming, unmerited favor that we're given, and it is the power that allows us to be generous. But on the flip side, on the same coin, this generosity that we have, it shows, it reveals even more grace that maybe we didn't see before. I want to see how that pans out in the next few verses. And as we think about, you know, one thing reveals another. You know, as people, you know, if you look at different cultures around the world, we realize, you know, humans were a fairly superstitious group. Whether it's we believe, you know, like in astrology, you know, like in general in society, there's a lot of people who buy into astrology. Like, oh, if you're born in this time of the year, then this is how you're going to be, right? Or I don't know if any of you have been to the U.S. It's awesome because there's so many Chinese things that are in the U.S. that you can't ever find in Hong Kong or anywhere in this world, in Asia, right? Like fortune cookies or like those placemats. They have these placemats and the zodiac symbol. And then depending on what animal you are, you know, there's like 12 animals. Like each animal, like you're a certain way. So I'm a snake, and like apparently like snakes are vain, you know, and they love beauty. I'm like, oh dang, I'm pretty vain. You know, like, oh shoot, what does that mean about me, right? So we typically think like, oh, if there's something about us or something that's associated with us, it reveals something about who we are. Or something that we do a certain way or a preference that we have, it reveals something about who we are or what we can see or what we can experience. And I wanted to show some examples of what this looks like, just in everyday context, right? So the first one is, this is how your sleeping position reveals how you are. So If you're a fetus, right, you sleep in fetus position, you know, I don't know if you're, like, you like being more comfortable or, like, you know, you're more warm or whatever it might be, right? Some of you were like, I want to look this up later. Like, what is my sleeping position, right? There's some crazy ones like military style or like on your side or whatever. Or what does your handwriting reveal about who you are? Are you one of those like, you write and like no one can understand what you're writing? So you know what, you're naturally your handwriting, like you throw your journal everywhere because no one can read it. It's like Morse code, right? They're like, what is this? It looks like chicken scratch. You know, it's like, what is that? Or your handwriting looks like someone typed it out. You're like, so meticulous, like, did you type that? And you're like, no, it's just my handwriting, you know? Like, what does that say about you, you know? You're like, super structured, you know, a little bit, you know? Okay, well, we won't go down that path. But sometimes we think that handwriting shows something about who we are. How about this? So all of you coffee snobs, what type of coffee you drink, what does it reveal about who you are? So I guess if you're a latte person, you're easygoing, comforting. But if you're cappuccino, you're bubbly, okay? With a hint of, you're a passionate kind of person. Yeah, I don't know. And then for black coffee, I don't know what you are. You're a little bit, you know, anyways. There's some really interesting ones too, like, what does your egg style say about you? Do you like it scrambled, sunny side up, hard boiled? I hard-boiled, everyone on the bus is really mad at you. You're likely not concerned. It doesn't matter. You're hard-boiled, okay? So, and then the last one, what does your poo say about you? I don't know how many of you, like, after you go, you're like, oh, what does it say? But yeah, actually, this is not just more, like, hypothetical, but there's actually like models, like scientific models about the shape and the consistency of your poo determines like what you've been eating and what nutrients you're missing and all that kind of stuff. So it's actually, you might want to go look this up and that'll explain a lot of things. I mean, this is all, you know, kind of like funny daily life, but if we look at some deeper things in our hearts, we're realizing, oh, there are a lot of things that are genuinely true about how we live reveals something about us or what we've experienced, right? Like how much time we spend studying for a test reveals how much you care about that class. So if that class is like really essential to your major, you're like in the library every night 24/7. If that class is like pass or fail and it's like a general, you're like, who cares? You know, like, YOLO, let's go to Shenzhen before the night before my exam, you know? Or how you relate with other people reveals what you believe about friendship. Like, do you believe that friendship means that, like, you have to share everything from the first day? You always have to have deep conversations? Or does it mean that you just have to spend a lot of time together? And that's what it means to have a friend. Or the one that's closer to what we're talking about, where you spend your money or how generous you are reveals something about what you think is important in your life or what material possessions or experiences are significant. Like the question of, oh, should I take a holiday trip or should I buy an iPad? Should I, you know, go purchase my child's education or should I get myself new glasses? You know, you're like, hopefully that's... Parents, you can talk it out, right? But something about our generosity and where we put our money reveals something about our experience of what we value. And what we value is tied inherently to our relationship with God and the grace that we've received. And so let's read in verse 6 and how Paul teases this out. He says in verse 6, accordingly, we urge Titus that as he has started, so he could complete among you this act of grace. The reason why he brings Titus in is because a year before he wrote this letter, Titus had gone to the Corinthian church and said, hey, you know, the church in Jerusalem is in need. You know, let's take this offering to give to them. And so now Paul is saying, you know, complete among you this act of grace. Finish the initial offering that you were going to give. Other translations, this act of grace, it translates act of grace in the New Living Translation as ministry of giving. In the
ERV stands for easy to read version. It's awesome. It's the special work of giving. Special work of giving. So somewhere along the way, Paul equates this act of grace to giving. The special work or this ministry of giving, he says this is an act of grace. And so we notice several statements that Paul makes about giving as an act of grace in the next two verses. In verse 7, let's read it. I'll actually read verse 7 and verse 8 together. It says, "But as you excel in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and all earnestness and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love is also genuine." That your love is also genuine. What does that mean? Why does Paul say, like, to the Corinthians, you know, as you excel in all these things, that you ought to also excel in this act of grace or this work of giving? Well, for context, there's two books written to the Corinthian church. We're currently studying 2 Corinthians in this passage. 1 Corinthians was a letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthian church because the Corinthians, they were getting really proud. And they were saying, all these gifts that I have, my faith, my speech, my knowledge, all this stuff, like, I did it. You know, and they're starting to make comparisons and they're saying, Paul, your speech isn't so great. And so Paul rebukes him like crazy. It's a crazy letter. You should read it. It's like all rebuke, almost, not all. But he's rebuking them for saying, oh, it's not something that you earn. The gifts that you have, like the faith, like the speech, the knowledge, it was given to you by God. It's grace. So what Paul is saying here now is as you excel in everything, so he's saying, Corinthians, you're proud, but yes, God did give you these gifts. He gave you faith. He gave you speech. He gave you knowledge, but it is the grace of God that has allowed you to express these gifts. In the same way, if you've experienced this grace over here, and faith and speech and knowledge and love is the result, then giving is also something that ought to be expressed. Giving is also an act of this grace over here that ought to be shown if you have this grace. What is he saying? He's saying here, this generosity reveals the grace that you've experienced, just like the gifts that you exercise reveals the grace that you've experienced. 1 Peter 4:10, in the NIV it says, "Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms." Peter's echoing the same thing that Paul is trying to say. He's saying, the gifts that you have received, he's saying, steward that. Why? Because that's how you steward God's grace. By using the gifts that you have received to serve others. He's saying you receive this grace, and therefore that grace allows you to give and serve people with these gifts. I'm wondering how many of us, we've exercised our gifts, in particular this gift of giving, that reveals the grace that has been given to us, and that we can also give unto other people. Through Jesus Christ. Christ uses us to give grace unto other people. I'm wondering if we don't see God's grace, or we've never experienced that, because we've never exercised those gifts. Some of us, we feel stuck in our relationship with God. You've been coming to church week after week, you've been going to life group, and you're like, God, I just feel like stuck. I just like, you know, life is just, you know, on and on. I read my Bible, I do my soap, and I'm trying to do, you know, just, ah, God. How many of us, you don't realize that it's in those very moments that God is saying, maybe it's because you haven't exercised your gifts. You haven't learned to bless someone. You haven't learned to think outside of yourselves. Because the grace that you've received is so powerful, and the grace that you're going to give now unto other people will allow you to experience more grace. Or help you to see the depths of God's grace that you've never seen before. What do I mean by that? I want to give us an example. I think just something that I just had the privilege of experiencing when I was back in Ann Arbor. I think some of you have been to the Ignite Conference here in our church in HMCC of Hong Kong, and it's an awesome time where we get to celebrate how God is stirring our church to be a church on mission. And it's a conference devoted to missions and seeing how God is going to stir up students and working adults and single and married couples to go and take this gospel to every generation. And what we want to be able to do is continue to see that. So I was in the Ignite Conference back when it first started in Ann Arbor, and one thing that we did, I was in charge of video streaming across the churches, because during that time, we had Ignite Conference at the same time, and we would like give each other updates over like video chat. And the toughest thing was, back then Hong Kong didn't exist, so we were just video chatting with, HMCC of Hong Kong didn't exist, and and then Hong Kong miraculously appeared, God said, let Hong Kong be, and then it was, right? And then HMCC of Hong Kong didn't exist, so we were just video streaming mainly with HMCC of Jakarta. And those of you who are Indonesian, you know that internet access in Indonesia is not the most reliable, right? Amen? Can I get an amen from... Internet access is not the most reliable, so it was crazy, and I was so tired, and I was so burnt out by that week, and I was like, God, this better be worth it. And we finally got it to work, and then the conference happened, and I was sitting up in like where all the video equipment were, where we were streaming and we were sending the video to them. They were sending video to us. And really, it was like a whole week's of work just for like 3 minutes of video streaming where people were just sharing updates. And I was like, okay, oh God, this better be worth it. And then after the sharing testimonies was done, I was like, why don't we just leave it on just so that we can see each other worship? And they were like, but in case it doesn't work, let's not share it with the rest of the church, but let's just test it on your own little screen to see if it works. And then if it works, then maybe next year we could try to implement it. So I was like, okay, fine, let's do that. And so we're just worshiping here after the testimony, and God was just moving, and we just have an amazing time of worship. Amen? Ignite worship, it's like really good. God is really moving powerfully. And then I was just sitting there, and I was the only person who was sitting in front of that screen watching HMCC of Jakarta just worship. And in that moment, I don't know what came upon me, but when I just saw them worshiping, I was like, wow, God. Like, every single person that I see on that screen, and they're all like this, you know? You're like, it's like a little bit weird, like watching other people worship from like halfway across the world. They have no idea who I am, but I'm like watching them worship. Right? So it's a little bit creepy. But I don't know why. It spoke to me so much because I was like, God, you gave me the privilege to be a part of this conference and to help set it up somehow. And then there were people who, you know, a couple years back went to Indonesia, to Jakarta, to start that church. And these are the people. They didn't do anything to deserve it, but they were recipients of God's grace, and now they get to worship all together with our HMCC churches. And when I saw that, I think my mind was just blown. I was just like, wow, God, you're so good. And at that moment, I was like, wow, I am the one that's now a recipient of God's grace. Because I get to see how God poured out His grace upon so many other people. I see the generosity of God. I see how good He is, how much He loves people, that He's willing to send people to give up their lives, to go to another country, to start a church, to make this live stream happen so that people can hear the gospel and worship Him all together. I was like, God, I didn't deserve this. I did nothing. In fact, all of my attitude that whole week leading up to it was just complaints. Just tiredness. I was bitter. But in that moment, God just totally changed my perspective. He's like, Bo, you deserve nothing but death. But I gave you a glimpse into the amazing grace that I've had, not only upon you, but upon so many other people, that maybe this is their first time experiencing it. And I'm wondering, and it was God's grace that, you know, even though I had a horrible attitude, at least God allowed me just to be available, just to be, you know, like, okay, I kind of like technology, so I'll just try to set this live stream up, but, you know, I'll just do it. God had His grace in me for that. And I'm wondering how many of us, we miss out on these opportunities to experience God's grace in a powerful way because we never put ourselves out there to say, God, I want to use the grace that You've given to me. I've experienced it. And I want to use that to serve others, to bless others, so that when I see them experiencing your grace, wow, it brings me so much joy. It brings me so much thankfulness. It brings me so much gratitude. And now I can excel in this grace of giving because I realize and I recognize that when you give me this grace, it transforms and my response is now all these other things like faith and speech and knowledge and giving. Whether it's my time or my talents or my treasure. I'm wondering how many of us, when usually it's me, okay, sometimes it's Erica, but usually it's me, the offering verse, okay, here we go, another offering verse. Okay, here we go, another budget update. Here we go, another passing of the baskets. How many of us, we can be like, God, I'm so thankful that this offering that I'm giving to you, you're using it to give grace to other people. You're using it so someone else can experience unmerited, undeserved favor that they didn't do anything to earn. I want to challenge you next time you give, pray that and just say, God, thank you. Thank you that I can excel. I get the privilege to give. Because you're going to use this to reveal your grace to someone who hasn't heard it before. Someone who's out there who's never experienced it before. Someone who's struggling, who doesn't have hope. Maybe it could be the person next to me. Who knows? But you're going to use it, and I trust you. And I believe that's what you're going to do. I think this quote kind of just encapsulates how we are to love and to give as we experience this grace. It's a quote from Jerry Bridges from a book called Transforming Press, or Church Transforming Grace. He says, here is a spiritual principle. We cannot exercise love unless we are experiencing grace. You cannot truly love others unless you're convinced that God's love for you is unconditional, based solely on the merit of Christ, not on your performance. Our love, either to God or to others, can only be a response to his love for us. End quote. And it goes back, that same idea. I'm wondering if we've never been able to reveal God's grace because we are not convinced that the God that we serve, the God that we experience, his love is unconditional, based solely on the merit of Christ, not on our performance, not on anything that we've done. But everything that we do is a response to him. Everything that we do. And whether it's love or it's giving our time, giving our talent, giving our treasures, whatever it is, this principle still remains true. That we're not going to be able to give or be generous or experience more of God's grace until we are convinced. Until we are fully convinced that God's love is unconditional, based solely on the merit of Christ. That is his grace. It was unmerited, not anything that we did, but it was what he did. And so the question is, how does this look? How is this practical at all? How can I actually exercise this on a day-to-day basis? And so what I want to do is, I want to give us a practical illustration. So I think a couple people are going to bring some baskets up. I wanted to share a little bit of how this applies specifically in the financial giving context. Okay? Specifically in the financial giving context. This can be applied to your time, your talents, and your treasure, but I want to give us an illustration of where we put our money shows or reveals to us where our hope is in, right? Our understanding of God's grace. And actually, this illustration was something that I kind of saw even when I was a growing Christian. Another pastor, he was able to share. I was like, wow, this is a really helpful practical illustration. So hopefully it will help us. So I have three baskets here, and these three baskets are different categories of my life and where I can put my finances. So I'll move this so all of you can see. So this basket, let's just call this the fun basket, okay? This is the YOLO, like, let's do dinner, karaoke, You know, let's go in a holiday basket, okay? This basket over here, this is the necessities basket. So this is like your monthly rent. This is your transportation costs to go to work. This is food that you have to eat. The basics of food, okay? Not the intercontinental buffet, you know, every single week. And then this is your generosity basket. And this is where you give to the church. This is where you give to God, to missions organizations, whatever it is that is considered, you know, generous according to God saying we ought to be cheerful givers, okay? So these are three categories of how we give. And so I have 1,000 Hong Kong dollars here. Anyone want it? Yeah? Okay. So 1,000 Hong Kong dollars. I just picked this because it's an even number. $1,000 for, you know, we're all in different financial situations. Some of us, you know, this is not much. For some of us, this is a lot. And so depending on where we're from, this is just $1,000 because it's going to be easy to do the math calculations. So let's say I'm going to go throughout a month and I'm going to use this in order to illustrate how I spend my money. So we're going to first start with the first scenario. We're going to start with the fun basket. Let's say, okay, what's coming up on October 30th, all of you Apple fans? New MacBook, probably, new iPad, new what else? I don't know, a lot of other stuff. And okay, let's say you're a tech fan, and you're like, oh, I'm so excited, October 30th, I'm going to pre-order, and I'm going to buy, and this is fun, you know, like, this is awesome. And you put that money down, and you're like, all right, okay, $800 here, it's going to be cost you way more than $800 to purchase that, but okay, I'm going to spend $800, and okay, I have maybe $200 left for my rent and all the other necessities. And you're like, oh shoot, that's not enough for rent. You're at $200 is clearly not enough. So, all right, well, I got to borrow from, you know, my auntie. So she has her credit card. So I'm going to pay the rest of rent on a credit card, or, you know, I'm going to borrow from friends or whatever it might be, or parents, right? For some of you students, like, mom, dad, I'm out of money. Okay, here you go. Like, here's the rest of what you need. So, oh, I guess it looks like I'm out of money. I guess I don't have any room for the generosity bucket anymore. Because I'm just out. I need a new iPad. It's the latest thing, okay? If my iPad's slowing down, it's only responding to my touch after 1 second now. It's like, you know, too slow, right? Sorry, I'm being facetious now. But that's sometimes how we might proceed with giving. I think this is a little bit of an unrealistic example, but let's do it again, and let's come up with something a little bit more realistic. Let's switch the fun and the necessity baskets. So if we're trying to be responsible, we're growing, we're saying, okay, God, you know, I think I need to be a little bit more responsible, and so I'm going to at least cover my rent. So I'm going to put $800 into rent, into food, into the necessities that I have, and then, oh, yeah, I think I want to go have fun. Or, you know, maybe let's say rent is only $700, okay? Unrealistic. Well, I'm going to go out with my friends, so I think that nice restaurant, All You Can Eat, is really good. So I'm going to spend $200 there. And, you know, heck, I'll get the extra buffet option for, you know, extra 30 minutes because, you know, I'm extra hungry today. God, you know, it seems like there's not much. Oh, wait, God, I found a $10 bill somewhere. All right, there you go, God, I'm done, you know, like, here we go. I gave, and that's my offering. How many of us, like, that's how we give? We cover our necessities, we make sure we're taken care of during the week, and then when it comes to offering time, we look in our wallets, we thumb through, oh, $100 bill, yeah, 10, you know, like, that's all I have today. So God, just take my leftovers. Well, I'm wondering if we do this again, if we can give with grace and our hope in Christ in mind. So let's now switch this. This was the necessity basket. This is the fun basket. So let's switch it to the generosity basket first. I know they all look the same, but just for consistency, okay? I know they all look the same. Let's say, okay, God, I want to honor you, and I know that we're not in the Old Testament anymore, but I want to at least, because I'm a cheerful giver, and I just feel compelled by you to say at least 10%, I want to start with that.
I want to give at least 10% of my gross income to you because that's where I just feel my conscience is clear and I can give as a sacrifice to you. So I'm going to give, out of my $1,000, I'm going to give you $100. And then I need to cover the rest of my necessities. So there we go, another $700 to rent and food and other things like that. And I'm like, okay, I have $200 left. Well, what could I use that for? Well, you know, I could go out with my friends. That could be karaoke. That could be, you know, other different type, that new bag that I really wanted, Louis Vuitton or, you know, Chanel or whatever it might be. It's not going to get you a Chanel bag, but. But what if, as you're realizing, oh, I could spend this $200, what if there's some need that comes up? Let's say a life group member is sick and they're bedridden right now, or your LCG, and they're just saying, hey guys, pray for me. And you're like, yeah, I'll pray for you. And you put like all those emojis on there, and you're like, I'm praying for you. How many of us, we said, hey, you know what? I don't need to go to karaoke this week. I could use that $100 to buy some medicine and give it to that life group member. Or let's say you heard about a missions organization or missionaries who are on the field, and they're saying, you know, we need support to continue the work of the gospel. And you say, oh, you know, maybe that's a good way that I can use the resource that I have to bless and to give others. The budgets that we've been sharing, that's another need that we see, especially this season of our church. There are a lot of things going on that when we order and we prioritize where our hope is in and where our money belongs, then it's really going to change how we look at the world and what we reveal to everyone else about the grace that we've received. What if that extra $100 is able to allow someone to hear the gospel? Would you give it? What if that extra $100 allows us to have an outreach where your friend who you've been praying for so long comes and experiences the gospel for the first time because they hear it in life room, they see it in community, and that causes them to want to get involved? What if that $100 that you gave because it was for your sick LCG who maybe they're struggling with their faith allows them to say, wow, I recognize, wow, this generosity, this love couldn't have come just from human people because humans are selfish, but it must have been the grace of God through that person. Because I've received the grace of God, when they get better and they're like, wow, now I have resources to be able to give to someone else, they can continue that chain of generosity and grace for so many people that haven't experienced it. I'm wondering if the way that we give and how we prioritize can be a reflection and reveal the grace that we've received ourselves. And that's why I want to finish with this last verse in verse 9. It says, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, by his poverty, might become rich. This is the good news of the gospel. This is Jesus Christ saying, I've given you everything. I've given you my son on the cross. He died for you. He bled for you. He rose again so that you could have assurance and confidence that his power and his grace is enough so that you could have eternal life. He rose again to the right hand of the throne of God so that you could be sure and guaranteed that he is reigning, that everything, the whole kingdom is his. And every spiritual blessing in the heavenly realms in Ephesians says that is now yours because we are co-heirs with Christ. This is the unmerited, amazing grace that he has given to us. We know that verse, John 3:16. We say it all the time, or sometimes, if we remember it. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. God was the one who gave. God was the one who initiated. God was the one who was generous. We will never outgive a generous God. And it's only when we know the generosity of God that we will be able to be generous and perpetuate that cycle of sharing that grace, both experiencing for ourselves so that someone else
can experience it as well. And that's why the one thing is genuine generosity comes from knowing the generosity of God. Genuine generosity comes from knowing the generosity of God. I want to give us some quick next steps. The first one is reflect on your understanding of grace. Reflect on your understanding of grace. I know this is, when we talked about blessed to be a blessing, you know, we're talking about giving, but I would argue that this passage is all about grace. And if you don't understand that grace, or you don't see how generosity is revealed, or you don't see how grace fuels that generosity, then I would challenge us to think back, reflect. If we've been walking with God for a while, or we've grown up in the church, maybe our understanding of grace is not consistent or in line with the Bible. Maybe there's these oceans of grace that we've never experienced, that people, we see other people like, oh, there's something different about their understanding of grace that I want to get to know. Spend some time evaluating, think about it, reflect on it, and be open to maybe the fact that you don't know grace as well as you think you do. And that maybe you need to go to someone and say, hey, my understanding of grace is off. Can you help walk me through and at least understand it? Second one is readjust your giving philosophy. Readjust your giving philosophy. Most of us, our giving philosophy is, oh, I have to give. I'm commanded to give. And I give out of obligation or duty or because there's a need. But can we give because it's a response? Because out of what we've received, the grace of God that we have, we say, God, I want to switch the reason why I give. Total motivation, 180 degrees. I'm not giving out of obligation anymore, but I'm giving out of joy, out of love. And I want to encourage some of us, we don't know how to readjust our philosophy. I didn't know what it meant to give generously. And for me, I just talked to someone who I saw that they were giving generously. They experienced it before. And I just asked them, how do you give? How do you budget? How do you manage your finances? Some of us, the reason why we're not able to give generously is because we have no idea how we're using our money. I want to encourage you to come up with a budget. If you don't know how to come up with a budget, ask someone who does know how to come up with a budget. And that's why we have all these wonderful married couples and single working adults. I'm praying that those of you who are single working adults and married couples, you have budgets and you're managing your finances. So undergrads, ask. Talk to people who are a couple steps ahead of you and just say, hey, how do you do this? I've never done it before. Lastly is respond by giving generously. Let's respond by giving generously, whether it's toward the budget that we've been talking about, whether it's to someone who we see that's in need, whether it's in our life group, whether it's a colleague or a friend or a coworker that we see, wow, this could really exemplify God's grace to that person. It doesn't have to be monetary. It could be time or talents, whatever it is that you're able to give. So with that, can we just stand and we'll just close out with some response. I think for myself, when I think about financial giving, is no matter how many times I hear it, whether it's, oh, you know, like, of course giving should be out of a response. Of course, you know, I should want to give. Of course I need to go deeper in my understanding of grace. You know, those are all, you know, theoretical things that I know in my head, but, you know, deep down in my heart, God, I recognize I don't really believe it. And I don't really trust you in that. And that might be where many of us are. And for us, I think we can't go wrong if we just, at the very least, if we say, God, I don't know. And you just hold your hands out and you're just saying, God, I have no idea. But if there's that desire to say, God, I want to experience generosity. I want to see how it reveals grace. I want to see how it fuels this overflow, this wealth, this lavish love. Then at least, God, I don't know how right now, but God, I want to. And that's the very least we could do. We could at least say, God, I want to. I want to go deeper in your grace. I want to go deeper in your love. I want to see for myself. I want to experience it because I haven't experienced it to the depth that I know is there. It's in your word, and the words are written there. And they're, I'm just trying to read it, but I don't see it right now. So God, would you please just reveal it to me? I think all of us, we could start there. Say, God, take me deeper. Take me deeper. So can we just do that? Can we just spend just the next few moments just saying, God, take me deeper into your grace. Take me deeper into your unmerited favor, your unmerited love. This hope that you've given to me and for other people. Just help me to be broken again. Not just that one time, 10 years ago, 5 years ago when I experienced it for the first time. But now, today, I want to experience it again, God. I know it's so good, but I just feel far. But I want to experience it again, again today. So please, Holy Spirit, would you come and would you meet me? Allow me to do that. So can we just begin, just open up your mouths and let's just pray. And let's just ask God, please reveal it and draw us closer, draw us deeper into his grace. And I want to believe that he's going to do that for us today. Let's do this. Let's respond together.